Well, it's really a pleasure to welcome Sue Carter, a professor of journalism, a person who is multifaceted in her work as a priest, as a faculty member, as an explorer, and also as our faculty rep to the Big Ten. So, Sue, it's really great to have you here. And I want to start with the faculty rep role for
Thanks,
a minute.
Thanks, Mr. Simon.
And tell people what that is and the sort of the faculty voice in athletics, because that's not a sports page column.
Every NCAA institution is required to have a faculty athletic representative, someone who serves as a linkage between athletics and academics. And it goes back decades. It was foundational to the formation of the NCAA and the Big Ten. And the faculty athletic representative's role is an interesting one because part of it's the institutional integrity, and that becomes increasingly important in our times with social media and all kinds of complicating factors. So making sure that's a significant role. Also, the academic integrity, and we've seen universities where that's gone wrong. So the faculty athletic representative has a role in trying to be an observer, as you once told me, be the eyes and the ears. Mm-hmm. And also... reminding student athletes and coaches that the faculty athletic representative is independent of athletics. As you mentioned, I'm a professor of journalism. That's where I'm housed. And while I love athletics, it's not where I'm housed. I don't have an office there. I don't have a direct report line at all. My reporting line, in fact, is to you.
I've been, the faculty reps, as I've watched them across the NCAA, the Big Ten, take on interesting roles. And one of the things that I've appreciated about you and your work here is not so much being engaged in the policy discussion, because that is a formal role in the Big Ten and
right.
the NCAA, but the time you spent talking to students and getting what I would call ground truth, and then helping us to better understand how to move forward to have every student-athlete have the best experience possible at Michigan State, recognizing that aspiration is difficult always to achieve, but something we have to work at every day. And so I've really appreciated that you're sort of that in our eyes and ears, the amount of time that you spend with student-athletes, not just, what's the next rule for the NCAA and how do we do some report on standards? But talk a bit about sort of your observations about student athletes as you've done this for a while.
It starts from the premise that students really matter to me. I was a student here at Michigan State, and I think this university has always been outstanding in how it deals with particularly undergraduates, that we care for them. So I think that's part of what feeds into this. At the fall, at the beginning of the academic year, I meet with virtually every team and talk with student-athletes, let them know what the faculty athletic representative does, and that I'm here for them in a way that they might not have someone else. I also go to games as I can, practices as I can. It's a pretty full life. But remain available and open to them for discussions. And while I'm not an interlocutor, at least I can hear them and sometimes hear them into speech and give them the courage and the tools that they need to go and talk about their issues or concerns or their joys.
I think one of the things we did already this off season, I guess you could call it, is a retreat of the Faculty Athletic Council, which Dr. Carter chairs. And it was an opportunity to speak with other faculty as well as students, both student-athletes and non, about current issues and setting the stage for next year. As an AD, one of the components of that I appreciated was to be able to step back and understand that student-athletes are indeed students, and many of the challenges that we face as an athletic department are also being faced by today's faculty. What social media has become, drugs and alcohol, issues that are out there in our society today that they're not specific to athletics. It's a bigger world and things are everywhere, and that conversation was very enlightening.
It was really helpful, and that half-day retreat grew out of conversations we had at an athletic council meeting in February because we realized we needed more time to talk about athletic culture and how it fits into the larger one. And as a longtime journalist, I also realized that we tend to focus on the minority of incidents or individuals or events that are negative. But the far larger panoply is mm-hmm. that these are really good students. We've got 800 student athletes, and the majority of them are having a really good experience. At the academic gala, we saw 300 students who have a 3.0 GPA or above.
Right.
And we forget to celebrate them and honor them and recognize them. So part of it's just empowering students so that when they graduate at age 21 or 22 or some of us a little older, they're able to go out and be full adults and contribute.
I do think that going back to what you teach in a different way, that the transformation of media and the speed of media mm-hmm. Now, instead of writing a column that may take a little bit longer to do for a newspaper,
right.
Has translated into getting it out into social media as rapidly as possible in as short a number of words as possible in order to be able to take the capture the airways and that means that complicated issues are often 144 or maybe three sentences, and students are bombarded by that all the time now.
They sure are.
Education is a world of paragraphs and essays. It's not a world of sound bites, and that collision is one that is true of student athletes who are subject to those sentences
mm-hmm.
And feel controlled by them in some way, because that's what students are telling us. And so how does being a journalism professor and what you're sort of teaching in the classroom and what your colleagues are doing in Comm Arts sort of translate into how you're hearing student athletes and giving them skills to sort of work through some of these issues that will last them for a lifetime?
Right. Just as students have changed, we've had to adapt to as faculty members.
Yeah.
And maybe a good example is the upcoming volleyball tour to Italy. I will accompany them as a faculty member. We're doing a one-credit course. And as I was putting together the syllabus and course materials, I realized they're going to be active. They learn in different ways. So a good part of the course material is a series of websites that are informative and also video documentaries. That's how they take in information better than when you and Mr. Hollis and I went to school and we were reading pages and pages and pages. So
I still want people to read pages. I'm not going to give up on it.
I know. I try.
Yeah, but
I'm having them do some reading.
And the videos have to be very short.
Well, yeah, the BBC is not exactly short. But to get them, and part of it is to understand that they take in information differently.
Mm-hmm.
So to meet them where they are, encourage them to go along to read that book. And I'd love it if they would read Mary Beard's SPQR, but I know that won't happen. But
I haven't given up.
Well, good for you.
I haven't given up.
But also to understand that they are bombarded by all kinds of platforms and screens, and to help them be good consumers of media, to be media literate, so that they can make the distinctions between or among various news sources or information sources, what's good, what's valid, how to be able to make those measurements.
Yeah. One of the things that I spend a lot of time, I know you all do, is talking with students about the world isn't their phone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the great values of these trips and being abroad in many ways is you still have your phone as the way maybe to do a language translation or find a map, but it becomes your world becomes bigger than your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
As you experience places that have been there for eons and compare it to your phone. And I think that's an important, context for all of us to have. And you're still going to rely on your phone or whatever the media is to do things, but the world has to be beyond that.
Right. There's critical information they'll get, the phrases in Italian that they'll need to have. But don't be like the meme that we've all seen of about five young people sitting on a bench in front of a fantastic work of art all looking at their phones.
Mm-hmm. Put them away.
Yeah.
But I think that, interestingly, I see a change, and you see more students than I do, who want to be more unplugged. I see them, defriending whatever the phrase is mm-hmm. appropriately to limit some of the noise that they're getting, being bombarded, carrying multiple phones, One that's their sense of who they are, and the other one is the more public phone in some ways, to try to find some sense in this cacophony of sound bites that they're experiencing. And I think that's where getting people engaged and talking is really important. Where a university has to be beyond the phones, the people that you brought with you in your phone.
As you probably know, there's a major conversation among faculty about allowing various screens in the class. Mm-hmm. And I don't allow laptops, cell phones. Apple Watches are a little harder to control. and I'll take them away.
Because
the theory about multitasking is, in fact, a false one. And if they're not paying attention, then they're not getting the value of what they've paid for in a course. It's distracting. It's distracting to other students sitting around and behind them as well. And there's no place for them. I mean, they can absorb the material. They can write, although handwriting's pretty bad these days. But there are ways to take in the information that doesn't allow them to veer off for a couple of minutes. And we've done it historically. I mean, you mentioned church. I mean, occasionally I'll see people reading the church bulletin while I'm preaching. You know, that's a screen I can take away from them too. So we are all easily.
I might do that occasionally too.
Yeah, I know.
I think we all believe that we can multitask better than we do, in terms of what happens, and that's one of the fallacies of I think. We all have to figure out how to focus and really pay clear and persistent attention. It's sort of like free throw shooting in some ways.
Right. Be present in the moment.
Be present in the moment and pay attention and be able to block everything out. And, to use the free throw shooting analogy, some free throw shooting is bad mechanics, but most of it is because people are not able to spend time in that moment. Mm-hmm. And to do it persistently and consistently. And that's really what learning is about. And
that's a good point.
And we have to sort of, I think, make those connections. And that's what employers are telling us. That's what others are telling us. And so how do we essentially, through a variety of experiences, get that persistence and consistency so those moments can become longer so that as hopefully educated beacons in our society, not to be elitist about it, but that these very intractable and multifaceted problems require a little bit more attention than reading 144 characters.
Right. I think maybe by showing students the rewards that come from being focused and persistent, mm-hmm. that in fact they have superior performance, whether it's on the field, mm-hmm. Whether it's catching that pass, shooting that free throw, or succeeding on an exam. They will do better if they're focused and able to really concentrate on what's in front of them.
Well, in the interview with Susie, she talked about Tori and the remarkable season she had because she was able to focus over long periods of time, consistently game after game after game. Mm-hmm. And that's really taken a player that might not have had the coming into the university, the greatest physical talent. She's not the tallest kid. But because of those habits of focus, persistence, and consistency, game after game, mm-hmm. she's elevated herself to be, a superstar here mm-hmm. in the classroom and not, because those skills are transferable. Mm-hmm. And now giving herself an opportunity to experience some things that she might not have had as a freshman.
Right.
And that's part of the messaging, I think, that athletics in general has to convey to our student-athletes to broaden their horizons.
I think maybe on the male side, I think of Denzel Valentine, mm-hmm. who also became really focused in his goals and what he needed to do, and that really succeeded. I'm intrigued in the pre-K even, pre-K and kindergarten levels, children are being taught to meditate. Uh-huh. And I have a picture of my grandson, who's now 5, and before swim meet, there he is. He's stretched out, and he's, but he's concentrating on what he's going to do in that particular little swim meet.
There's also a national movement about mindfulness.
Right.
Which is to take, again, it was focused initially on students who have some attention questions. But it's now working in entire classrooms to find these meditation moments, these calming moments, mm-hmm. That provide signals that it's okay to sort of rest for a moment while you then regenerate and can give your full attention and focus to the next task.
As a 50-plus-year-old, that's a challenge that I have sometimes is we don't have an understanding of the use of these, and they're so intense. It's they can't ever be taken away. And I'm always worried about the intensity that devices have on people, on individuals, adults, and children. But it is part of our society today, and it can't be isolated in a vacuum because there's so many different, you know, teachers have to employ oversight on it. Parents do, employers do. It kind of goes through so many different areas, but it's become a mode of communication that today's youth is using, whether we old people like it or not.
Right, yeah. Almost exclusively.
Almost exclusively.
You always sort of go back and hear things differently in different contexts. Mm-hmm. And in growing up, doing multiple sports, doing multiple things, having multiple interests, whether it's science or reading, it was always valued as something really important.
Right.
And so it was sort of like everything in moderation and give your best to anything you do. It was a very simple kind of mantra. And part of what I think what we need to do with today's students is sort of give them some simple mantras like that. And it's true with technology. Mm-hmm. It's an extraordinarily valuable tool, but you can't use it to excess. You can't use any website to success. You can't rely on whatever the new widget is that they're using. In Hong Kong, it's WeChat.
WeChat.
Yeah, sure. And you know we're having trouble connecting to people, and we know about X number of people, and we've got four times X who are on WeChat.
Right.
You know, and communicating, and so that's really powerful to be there, but not to be there all the time. You need to sort of see people in person too. So how do we sort of just, without demonizing any new technologies, how do we sort of say, okay, you need a little bit of meditation, you need a little bit of intensity,
right,
you need a little bit of this, and that's all good. And it's not bad to do those things. That's what we aspire to do, because that's how you develop resilience and really capacity to achieve over long periods of time. So this is what you want to do without demonizing any one of these.
No question.
So structuring the balance.
It's a balance. Sure. And so how do we sort of, my grandmother's old sayings are not very useful, but they're the kind of thing that we need to find the modern day equivalent for. So these folks are able to enjoy life in a very profound way instead of having all of the tensions that they feel in their life sort of eating them up and taking away opportunities that they might benefit from.
I think part of it is creating opportunities for conversation to break out.
Mm-hmm.
Getting in this case, students or student-athletes and general student population together in a way that has them physically in each other's presence.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we have this conversation, we're looking at each other. And we can read from that, and ideas spring forth from comments you've made. It takes us down another road. So the physical presence of each other, you know, so putting away the phones. Some coaches I know have the teammates come in, put all their phones down. You know, so at least for that moment, for that team meeting, all the phones are on a table, and they can pick them up afterward. It's interesting. There's a coffee house, a cafe in the UK that no longer has Wi-Fi. So if you go there, the desire is to have people talk and be in conversation again.
Mm-hmm. So I want to sort of cycle back to the beginning of the conversation. You've been a faculty rep for a while now. What excites you about intercollegiate athletics, and what gives you pause for the future?
I think
they may be, you know, two sides of the same coin, I recognize.
No, it's a great question.
I'm guessing they'll be the same as mine.
Yeah. So you can chime in as well. So this should be a conversation between the two of you. I'm just sort of the interlocutor on this one.
I think what's available for student athletes, what they get from participation, the skills, the team building. I look at the head of the Student Athlete Advisory Committee. Jasper Konen, who's the who's a tennis player, men's tennis player, and also team captain. And he has developed remarkable skills, and he will do extraordinarily well. So the opportunity for leadership and growth in those kinds of areas, and while not every student athlete will do that, a lot of them do take part. So as we look at what's available for student athletes, we had two recently, David Zoltowski, one, go off as a Churchill scholar. We had our first Rhodes scholar in a while. So those kinds of things. What concerns me is, and I brought with me, so I'll hold them up so people can see them.
This is radio.
Is this radio? I didn't know that.
Zoom in on that.
The division manual for the NCAA, that's about an inch thick. The Big Ten handbook, that's maybe 3/4 inch thick. Filled with rules, and some of the rules are so minuscule and so arcane and so binding. So I worry about this kind of approach. I worry about pending litigation. I worry about the prospect of legislation involving intercollegiate athletics, possibly at the congressional level. So there are a lot of things in the mix. I would suggest that 10 years from now we'll see a substantially different landscape. And it makes me worry to some extent about women's athletics as the money shifts. We may be in the glory years of women's athletics thanks to Title IX, but some of that may change.
I think you're spot on. It's
I've listened to you. No.
Yeah.
No, I think we observe a lot of the same things.
Yeah, it's the generation of revenues in order to create outstanding opportunities for today's student athletes and those that come to watch events. I mean, we really have two purposes. One is to develop tomorrow's leaders that are our student athletes, and the other is to create a gathering place for our community, our faculty, our alumni, our fans. And the revenues that are being generated today are substantial and significant, and they have to continue to be aimed at the opportunities that we're presenting for those communities that we serve. And that's an area of focus that, you know, in my remaining tenure as an athletic director, as an administrator, I really want to put focus to is making sound decisions, making decisions in the interest of those two areas.
Right. I think that this is, again, going back to sort of what I would think about public perception being driven by media. Mm-hmm. If you look at all of the student athletes across the country, I've often said that I want to be the president for the 99%, not the 1%. Mm-hmm. And I think as a faculty rep, you have a responsibility not to simply focus on the 1%, but really think about the 99%, because it's their lifetime work is to be something other than a student athlete who gets paid for their craft. And I think, Mark, it's the same for you. So it is a growing tension. As the spotlight, if you think about our sports, and you think about out of the 800, the dialogue is about 100 of the 800.
Right.
And of that 100, there's a small percentage that go on to really play a sport in a particular way. Now you can pick up a golfer here or a golfer there or a tennis player, but that's not part of the dialogue or the conversation. Maybe when we win a Big Ten championship, that one player gets sort of some highlight. But by and large, people don't care about that. And that being driven to where people care, mm-hmm. as opposed to where our student-athletes are and our responsibility, is really that, I think, growing tension.
Right. I think as an AD, I felt responsibility for the collection of student athletes that we have, and over the years, mm-hmm. I'm not where you're at, where you're responsible for 50,000, but I feel responsible as an athletic director to have a positive impact on 50,000 students, not just 800. And that's what we're driving toward.
And that's the greatest gift that we can give, to be able to set that next generation. I remember what Krista McAuliffe, who's the teacher astronaut, who said, "I teach and I touch the future." And it's not, for all of us, it's not just teaching. It's how we are able to have an imprint on the lives of the young people who come through this institution.
Right. Really, the Roy, my spouse, paraphrases McAuliffe by saying to his friends who don't see research or don't see what we do or only see a game on Saturday, mm-hmm. that we are about creating the future.
Yeah.
and the future isn't the game. The game will be recorded by some past book,
right,
as what the record was. The future is what happens to the young people who are playing, mm-hmm. Or standing on the sideline or doing whatever as a part of that, whether the trainers or the managers.
Or
the
manager,
manager turns into leader. But, you know, how do you think about that when, again, the pressure of the media is about the playing of the game.
Right.
And I think it's hard when universities are under such economic stress because of tuition constraint. In a state like Michigan, you know, not every state is like Michigan, but we're still at the bottom in support for public higher education. You know, we're working on $1,992 per student from the state.
Mm-hmm.
Now, tuition has taken part of that. But, you know, we've not grown the combination of tuition and state appropriations much more than a little bit over inflation because we're funding all of our deferred maintenance and everything else that people expect quality from. And that's happening in athletics, too.
Right.
That there's TV revenue and there's ticket revenue.
Right.
And a demand for more and more opportunity. So it's hard to turn down revenue when that goes over 800 students and also provides a benefit for other students. Ohio State would be a great example of that. We're in that league, I think, and growing in that league, where they're providing a lot of opportunity for students beyond student-athletes
right. Because
of that revenue.
They're able to do that, right?
They're able to do that. They're able to provide, you know, not just a study abroad for somebody in a high profile, you know, to get in the front page, but more opportunities for students to learn and grow beyond the season.
Mm-hmm.
And so all those things are really, really positive, and the revenue provides that. But it's gotten a little bit out of balance as we've lost control, potentially, of our lives because we're now more tied to TV.
Right. When the TV contracts expanded, when the NCAA lost a suit for antitrust back in the early 80s, things really started to change. And the money came in major proportions. We've seen it in politics with Citizens United, how money really guides what happens, and we're seeing what money drives in intercollegiate athletics as well.
And so the question is, how do we recognize that we're not going to change that unilaterally, as much as the three of us might want to argue for that, or might lose a voice that we're okay with losing a bit of revenue if we don't have to play a certain time. But our voice was not the predominant voice even in the conference.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the predominant voice even in the top five, and it's not the predominant voice. And we're a democracy like everything else. And rules and stuff are made by collections of people with very different interests.
You had an interesting story that you took part in the Wall Street Journal about 2 years ago.
I did. Right. You noticed how many the president sort of grabbed on to that.
But it was brilliant, and I've saved it and shared it with others, and that's sort of the notion of a super club. I don't want to make it too short a synopsis, but understanding that there might be a tier below varsity where certain amenities are provided to student-athletes, but not at the accelerated level. So that can expand the core, share the dollars in a greater sense. It's fraught with problems, and it's got a lot of ideas, and I hope it gets some legs at some point because I think it's a really good idea.
Yeah, I think that I firmly believe that there are lots of lessons to be learned from sport.
Right.
And if you think about access to women in sport, I think that that capacity to compete, to be able to learn about team, to do lots of things that have come from sport because of Title IX, have given women the opportunity to get greater leadership positions as we need all the talent available to us to move the country forward.
Right.
I mean, I think it's just, and those are great skills to have. And if you're not in that focused moment in competition, you can't replicate that by playing a video game,
mm-hmm.
no matter what you try to do. And those have been important opportunities to broaden the leadership base. And but they're not the highest valued if you look at the economics of it. But they pay a dividend to the country and to the world in huge proportion as you think about the discussions that are even happening with the Trump administration about the role of women as they're in the Mideast. And those things are really important to do because you can't teach those without that some of that competition and some of those experiences around sport. Not solely, but, you know. But
it's a component.
It's no different than having the solar car competition or the hacking competition or whatever it is. There's a lot of things that go with it. So we need to be careful about how we don't lose those opportunities to compete.
Right.
But also care for students in a different way so that their health and safety is better tended, that their sense of purpose that comes from wearing a shirt is still there, their sense of pride that goes with part of this as we think about broadening the base for sport, not narrowing the base for sport. And unfortunately, the model of the NCAA is that if you have high revenue and fewer sports, your conference is more competitive than if you have...
Do the letters SEC mean anything?
Well, but I mean, but it's a different...
I know.
You know, they still have great teams. You know, they win women's gymnastics. It's not without competition. But there is a way that things change. And so the amenities that are provided then because of that philosophy become competitive issues for folks who want to have a broader base for students.
Right.
And you know, and we're judged by the win and loss record in the paper. We're judged by, you know, the gadgets that we have, and then I also think that you know one of the things that as these gadgets become and amenities become so much the attraction, you know, life doesn't have those.
Mm-hmm.
No, life doesn't have a video screen on every locker.
And right. And the transition then for those who don't make it at the pro level is much more abrupt and much more difficult. And I'm not sure that that the amenities really are doing what we should be doing, which is making sure that they have a lifetime of experience that's positive, not just a game that's positive.
No question.
Or and season. That's really the voices sure. and the discussion of athletics that is very hard to have right now in the because all of your discussions are about
all these rules here.
About all those rules. And,
how to get around them.
And so right. we're celebrating on the front page of the paper somebody who can get around rules.
Then
there'll be a rule, and then somebody will get around it again. And is that the life lessons we want to teach people?
We need to enrich but not entitle. So that students come here with a sense of real values, core values, but not an overwhelming entitlement.
But athletics and beyond. I mean, it's a great phrase for athletics and beyond.
Because it's all about that. I mean, and we are a privileged place. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're a lead institution. We hope we're providing an elite education abroad across socioeconomic class, which I think we're doing if you look at our demographics compared to others.
Mm-hmm.
We had 31,000 students who had some kind of service engagement experience last year.
Mm-hmm.
And they're learning that sense of responsibility that comes with education, not just entitlement that comes with education, which I also think is important to moving the country forward. But we have to think about that in the course of intercollegiate athletics and the role that it plays in signaling you know, what's important. But I also turn back to the leadership both you and Mark have provided in being brave enough to have those conversations and raise those points.
Mm-hmm.
To also, I think, work as diligently as both of you do in listening to student athletes. I know both of you spend just an enormous amount of time talking to students.
Right.
And worrying about leadership experiences, your leadership
mm-hmm.
council.
Mm-hmm.
SAC, which is a sort of different group, the students on the athletic council.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not pro forma. It's because you really are spending a lot of time listening to student voices. Susie commented, you know, that they, based on listening to her kids,
right.
are having a different summer.
Right.
And it really, I think, requires that partnership and that sense of of being in it together with our students, and I think you guys have done a great job of doing that. We just need to continue to work on it as we try to be better tomorrow than we are today. So thanks for your leadership.
Thanks so much. It is important. We'll keep working on it.
Thank you.